Hans, is anything you want to add while we're at this changing waiver?
No, not really.
But I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have to the board at this point.
Okay, well, we'll have board members participating in all the breakout sessions.
I'd be very interested to hear what you have to say about the conceptual framework. We are really struggling with a couple of issues. I mean, what is an asset is not so, that is clearly, that is rather clearly definable. What is the difference between a liability and equity becomes already much more problematic. And where we really face a lot of difficulties is to find a conceptual basis for OCI. So any thoughts that you, illuminating thoughts that you might have for us today would be extremely helpful.
Maybe in just over an hour's time we'll have the answers to both questions. Right, Peter, are you going to introduce the conceptual framework?
Yeah, I'm going to introduce it and then hand it over. So as Hans said, we've selected a couple of topics for you to look at in the breakout groups. One topic is about the distinction between liabilities and equity, and the other is about the distinction between profit or loss and OCI. And the staff will leave those together, give a brief tee up to both of those, and then we'll go out into our breakout groups, and hopefully you'll come back with the answers for us, or possibly a series of new questions. So, Manuel, are you going to start off on liabilities and equity?
Yes. Yeah, thanks Peter. Morning everyone. This is agenda paper two ways, so it's the slide pack outlining, briefly outlining some of the issues regarding the distinction between liabilities and equity and the effects of that distinction. In terms of, I guess, where we are at the moment, the board has had an initial education session on the distinction between liabilities and equity, what was proposed in the discussion paper, and what the feedback on those proposals was. And it's this meeting today is quite helpful because we'll be taking a paper back to the board in July, and we'd like to include some of the feedback we hear today when we do that, when the board makes its decision, you know, in July. Now, I won't go through the slide deck in detail. I just wanted to note why this is such a key problem for us. The distinction between liabilities and equity has a very profound effect on the financial statements, on the balance sheet, both on the balance sheet and profit or loss. In addition, liabilities are typically remeasured directly, whereas equity is not. The distinction itself is quite limited. There is only one distinction, and therefore there can only be one piece of information that we can present through that distinction. Many people in the feedback requested additional work to be done around disclosure and presentation, and we will be looking at that in the context of the liabilities and equity standards level project. So at the moment the focus is very much on the definitions and the distinction. Given that we're going to be looking at presentation and disclosure at some point in the future, how we frame this, I guess, the problem is the aim is to identify what is best provided through the distinction between liabilities and equity and what is best provided by other means. So it's very much looking at what is the most efficient way of delivering this information to users, preparers, how you present that information, or what is most useful, the most useful starting point for presenting the results of the company. Now, to do that now, we've taken a very simplified approach to this session. We haven't gone into a lot of the complex instruments that are out there because we we would probably end up getting bogged down in complexity. Now, we have selected two instruments. I did look at slide six. We have selected two very simplified instruments to illustrate the different approaches and the results of those approaches in this session. And we'd like you to focus on these two. They are simplified and they're probably not representative of the real instruments that cause problems, but there's so much variety out there in the types of instruments. We try to focus on those two key characteristics. And those two key characteristics are whether the obligation is required to be settled by transferring the entity's assets. So, for instance, cash. Does it require them to pay cash? And what drives the value of that obligation? So, how much of the value of the entity, the obligation? Required them to give up. We've illustrated three different approaches. There are probably different variations of these approaches that we could go down, but I think the distinction is quite clear cut. So under one approach, the settlement approach would just be based on whether the obligation requires a transfer of cash or not. The value approach is based on what drives the value of the obligation, whether that's driven by, for instance, the value of a common share or not. And finally, the narrow equity approach is identifying the most residual equity interest and classifying that as equity, and classifying any other claim, whether it's another class of equity or class of share or a liability as a liability. Just before we go through the breakout session, I just wanted to run through how I've set up the examples. If you just want to go to slide 11. Just to explain the boxes. I haven't used numbers here, I've just used the diagram to illustrate the effect. And I have tried to show the effect both on the balance sheet and P&L. And what I'm trying to show you here is how different classifications will affect, standard, ratios, for instance, debt equity ratios to show the leverage of the company, and also what pieces of those or what changes in liabilities would be presented within total profit or loss and other comprehensive income. The main thing we would like to get out of this session is to have a better understanding of what drives your thoughts about whether an item should be classified as liabilities or equity. So when we look at the classification of share settled debts, or the classification of putable shares, is the outflow of resources more important than the change in value? Or is the change in value more important than the fact that resources need to leave the entity? And traditionally, we haven't looked at this in this way. We've focused very much on the definition, so we've tried to look at the effects a bit more clearly here, to focus on how the classification affects the balance sheets and the P&L. Does anyone have any questions at this point about the slide deck? Any clarifications before we go to the breakout sessions or what we're asking of you?
Maybe just to get it crystal clear,
yeah.
That on the example where you settle liability with your own shares,
yes,
is a question. Suppose that the own shares double in price. Should you record the change in value in the balance sheet and in the P&L.
Yes, yes. So if the shares, so you have a debt.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a fixed value debt.
Yeah.
That you're using your own shares to settle. So if the not, if the value of your shares doubles,
yeah,
you'll issue less shares to settle that debt. If the value of your shares goes down, you'll be issuing more. The number of shares that you issue will be smaller, will go down. So the value is fixed.
Okay.
And you're just simply using your shares as a type of currency to settle that debt. Yes. And the puttable shares is, it's almost the inverse. The puttable shares, the value is based on the value of a common share. However, it does require an outflow of cash to settle that claim. So in one case, the value is changing in all other respects the same as a bond. And in the other case, the value is changing in all other respects the same way as a common share. However, it requires a cash outflow.
Is there a change if you have already bought the shares to cover the one you have to give at the end?
Sorry?
If you have already bought your own shares,
yes,
to give it,
yes,
does it change something?
Well, I think this is one of the things that we need to get into a bit more detail when we examine the purchase later on. I think for the purpose of this example, just assume that the entity is able to issue shares. That could be because it's already bought them, it holds them in its treasury stock, or it's within its authorization limit. So there's no restriction to how many shares the entity is able to issue in this example. I think we talked a bit about restrictions on the entity's shares at the board meeting last week. And if there are, for instance, restrictions and the entity is required to pay cash, then that's very similar to a bond, for instance. So we just want to look at the instance where you have that ability.
So Peter and Manuel will be in the two groups that will discuss this. So technical questions we can deal with within those two groups. Should we move on to Yulia? Brief introduction on Croatia.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, everyone. I will start with a couple of brief reminders and then discuss the tentative proposed approach to profit and loss and OCI. So this will be agenda papers 2C for the slide deck and 2B is a paper that describes the approach. So first of all, why we are looking at PNL and OCI? Obviously this topic was identified as a key area that NP needs to address as part of the agenda presentation. And we were also told that users tend to look at profit or loss and generally tend to ignore the movements in OCI. So what the ISB did in the discussion paper? The ISB proposed that the conceptual framework should require profit or loss as a total or subtotal and should also describe the type of items that could be included in OCI and related approaches to recycling. So what we heard in response to the discussion paper was quite mixed. One area of consensus was that P&L is indeed a very important source of information about performance and profit or loss should be required as a total or subtotal. We also heard that generally it's important to support the use of OCI and support the use of recycling. However, views were very mixed how narrow or how broad OCI should be. And views were also very mixed which items and when should be recycled. So in April, the ISB discussed the way forward on P&L and OCI. And the ISB considered three approaches. Approach one. Do nothing in the conceptual framework at this time. Instead, initiate a project on performance reporting and consider the use of profit or loss and OCI in the context of that project. Approach two, provide high-level principles in the conceptual framework. And under that approach, the use of OCI will be seen pretty much as an exception. And finally, approach three developed the specific proposals that were included in the discussion paper. Now, the ISB rejected approach one, which is defined performance. And this is primarily because the ISB noted that that approach will likely take a long time and will not necessarily succeed, given the past history of the debate on the matter. And the ISB also noted that in theory, this approach could be taken in addition to other approaches, rather than instead those other approaches. So what the ISB directed the staff to do is to develop an approach that would emphasize the role of profit or loss as a primary source of information about performance and provide high-level principles to the ISB on the use of OCI. So in June, the staff presented this approach to the ISB, and this approach is described in agenda paper to be for this meeting. So under the tentative proposed approach, P&L will be described as a primary source of information about performance of the entity for the period, and it will be required as a total or a subtotal. The objective of profit and loss will be described as to provide information about the return for the period, so confirmatory information, and also provide information that is useful in assessing prospects for future cash flows, so predictive value. Because P&L is a primary source of information, there will be a rebuttable presumption that items of income and expense should be included in profit or loss unless the ISB concludes that in a particular case, including an item of income or expense in OCI enhances relevance of profit or loss as a source of information about performance. So that could be the case, for example, when the ISB decides that one measurement basis is appropriate for profit or loss and another measurement basis is appropriate for balance sheet. This presumption could also be rebutted in other cases. Now, because P&L is a primary source of information about performance, there is also a rebuttable presumption that items of income and expense included in OCI should be recycled to profit or loss. This presumption can be rebutted if the ISB concludes that recycling actually does not enhance the relevance of profit or loss or jeopardizes the relevance of profit or loss, which could be the case, for example, when there is no appropriate basis for recycling. Now, in the approach proposed by the staff, we also propose to describe particular types of income and expense which could only be included in profit or loss. So in other case, for particular types of income and expense, the presumption cannot be rebutted. So that would be, for example, impairment losses or gains and losses on initial recognition of an asset liability, dividends, interest, depreciation or amortization. However, the ISB concluded that including a list of examples in the conceptual framework is not appropriate and instead directed the staff to consider whether it's possible to identify principles for when items of income and expense can only be included in profit or loss. And so this is what the staff is considering at the moment. What we would like to do as a breakout sessions where we welcome your thoughts, first of all, do you agree with rebuttable presumption that income and expense should be included in P&L? Do you agree with the rebuttable presumption in recycling? Do you agree when there is a dual measurement for an asset and liability, the OCI could be used? And finally, if you believe there are particular principles for when item of income and expense can only be included in profit or loss, we would very much welcome your thoughts on that question. With that, do you have any questions for me before we move on to breakout sessions?
Okay, so I guess the problems are clear, but the answers are rather more difficult, aren't they? So we're going to move to the breakout sessions then.